25. The tiny bit of encroaching blackness was perhaps the width of a fingernail, but to the staring watchers it magnified itself into the crack of doom. For Theremin, the sight of that small arc of darkness struck with terrible force. He winced and put his hand to his forehead and turned away from the window. He was shaken to the roots of his soul by that little chip in Dovim's side. Theremin, the skeptic. Theremin, the mocker. Theremin, the tough-minded analyst of other people's folly.
Gods, how wrong I was.
As he turned, his eyes met Sephira's. She was at the other side of the room looking at him. There was contempt in her eyes. Or was it pity? He forced himself to meet her gaze and shook his head sadly, as though to tell her with all the humility there was in him,
I fouled things up and I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It seemed to him that she smiled. Maybe she had understood what he was trying to say. Then the room dissolved in shrieking confusion for a moment, as everyone began to rush frenziedly around. And a moment after that, the confusion gave way to an orderly scurry of activity, as the astronomers leaped to their assigned tasks, some running upstairs to the observatory dome to watch the eclipse through the telescopes, some going to the computers, some using handheld instruments to record the changes in Dovim's disk. At this crucial moment, there was no time for emotion. They were merely scientists with work to do. Theremin alone, in the midst of it all, looked about for Bine and found him finally sitting at a keyboard madly working out some sort of problem. Of Aethor, there was no sign at all. Shirin appeared at Theremin's side and said prosaically,
First contact must have been made 5 or 10 minutes ago. A little early, but I suppose there were plenty of uncertainties involved in the calculations, despite all the efforts that went into them.
He smiled.
You ought to get away from that window, man.
Why is that? Said Theremin, who had swung around again to stare at Dovim.
Aethor is furious, the psychologist whispered. He missed first contact on account of this fuss with Folliman. You're in a vulnerable position standing where you are. If Aethor comes by this way, he's likely to try to throw you out the window.
Theremin nodded shortly and sat down. Shirin looked at him, eyes wide with surprise.
The devil, man, you're shaking.
Eh? Theremin licked dry lips and then tried to smile. I don't feel very well, and that's a fact. The psychologist's eyes hardened.
You're not losing your nerve, are you?
No, cried Theremin in a flash of indignation. Give me a chance, will you? You know, Shirin, I wanted to believe all this eclipse rigmarole, but I couldn't. I honestly couldn't. It all seemed like the sheerest woolly fantasy to me. I wanted to believe it for Bine's sake, for Sephira's sake, even for Aethor's sake in a strange way. But I couldn't. Not until just this minute. Give me a chance to get used to the idea, all right? You've had months. It's hitting me all at once.
I see what you mean, Shirin said thoughtfully. Listen, have you got a family, parents, wife, children?
Theremin shook his head. No, nobody I need to worry about. Well, I had a sister, but she's 2,000 miles away. I haven't even spoken with her in a couple of years.
Well then, what about yourself?
What do you mean?
You could try to get to our sanctuary. They'd have room for you there. There's probably still time. I could call them and say that you're on the way, and they'd unlock the gate for you.
So you think I'm scared stiff, do you?
You said yourself you didn't feel so good.
Well, maybe I don't. But I'm here to cover the story. That's what I intend to do. There was a faint smile on the psychologist's face.
I see. Professional honor, is that it?
You might call it that. Wearily, Theremin said, Besides, I helped in a big way to undermine Aethor's preparedness program. Or have you forgotten? Do you really think I'd have the gall now to go running for shelter into the very sanctuary I was poking fun at, Shirin?
I hadn't seen it that way.
I wonder if there's any more of that miserable wine hidden around here somewhere. If ever there was a time when a fellow needed a drink...
Shh, Shirin said. He nudged Theremin violently. Do you hear that? Listen!
Theremin glanced in the direction Shirin was indicating. Folliman 66 stood by the window, a look of wild elation on his face. The apostle was droning something to himself in a low sing-song tone. It made the newspaper man's skin crawl.
What's he saying?
He whispered. Can you make it out?
He's quoting the book of Revelations, 5th chapter, replied Shirin.
Then urgently,
Keep quiet and listen, will you?
The apostle's voice rose suddenly in an increase of fervor.
And it came to pass in those days that the sun, Dovim, held lone vigil in the sky for ever longer periods as the revolutions passed, until such time as for full half a revolution it alone, shrunken and cold, shone down upon Kalgash. And men did assemble in the public squares and in the highways there to debate and to marvel at the sight, for a strange fear and misery had seized their spirits. Their minds were troubled and their speech confused, for the souls of men awaited the coming of the stars. And in the city of Trigon, at high noon, Vendra too came forth and said unto the men of Trigon, Lo, ye sinners, though ye scorn the ways of righteousness, yet will the time of reckoning come. Even now the cave approaches, to swallow Kalgash, yea, and all it contains. And in that moment as he spoke, the lip of the cave of darkness passed the edge of Dovim, so that to all Kalgash it was hidden from sight. Loud were the cries and lamentations of men as it vanished, and great the fear of the soul with which they were afflicted. And then it came to pass that the darkness of the cave fell full upon Kalgash in all its terrible weight, so that there was no light to be seen anywhere on all the surface of the world. Men were even as blinded, nor could one see his neighbor, though he felt his breath upon his face. And in this blackness there appeared the stars in countless number, and their brightness was as the brightness of all the gods in concourse assembled. And with the coming of the stars there came also a music, which had a beauty so wondrous that the very leaves of the trees turned to tongues that cried out in wonder. And in that moment the souls of men departed from them and fled upward to the stars, and their abandoned bodies became even as beasts, yea, even as dull brutes of the wild, so that through the darkened streets of the cities of Kalgash they prowled with wild cries like the cries of beasts. From the stars then there reached down the heavenly flames that was the bearer of the will of the gods, and where the flames touched, the cities of Kalgash were consumed, even to utter destruction, so that of man and of the works of man nothing whatever remained. Even then...
There was a subtle change in Fahleman's tone. His eyes had not shifted, but somehow it seemed that he had become aware of the absorbed attention of the other two. Easily, without pausing for breath, he altered the timbre of his voice so that it rose in pitch and the syllables became more liquid. Theremin, caught by surprise, frowned. The words seemed to be on the border of familiarity. There had been nothing more than an elusive shift in the accent, a tiny change in the vowel stress. Yet Theremin no longer had the slightest idea of what Fahleman was saying. Maybe Sephira would be able to understand him now, Sheeran said. He's probably speaking the liturgical tongue now, the old language of the previous year of godliness that the Book of Revelations was supposedly translated from. Theremin gave the psychologist a peculiar look. You know a lot about this, don't you? What's he saying, then? You think I can tell you? Oh, I've done a little studying lately, yes, but not that much. I'm just guessing at what he's talking about. Weren't we going to lock him in a closet?
Let him be, Theremin said. What difference does it make now? It's his big moment. Oh, let him enjoy it.
He shoved his chair back and ran his fingers through his hair. His hands weren't shaking any longer.
Funny thing, he said. Now that it's all actually begun, I don't feel jittery anymore.
No?
Why should I? Theremin said. A note of hectic gaiety had crept into his voice. There's nothing I can do to stop what's going to happen, is there? So I'll just try to ride it out. You think the stars are really going to appear?
Not a clue, Sheeran said. Maybe Bine would know.
Or Aethor.
Leave Aethor alone, said the psychologist, laughing. He just passed through the room and gave you a look that should have killed you.
Theremin made a wry face. I'll have plenty of crow to eat when all this is over, I know. What do you think, Sheeran? Is it safe to watch the show outside?
When the darkness is total...
I don't mean the darkness. I can handle darkness, I think. I mean the stars.
The stars?
Sheeran repeated impatiently.
I told you, I don't know anything about them.
Well, they're probably not as terrifying as the Book of Revelations would want us to think. If that pinpoint in the ceiling experiment of those two students means anything... He turned his hands palms upward as though they might hold the answer. Tell me, Sheeran, what do you think? Won't some people be immune to the effects of the darkness and the SARS?
Chiron shrugged. He pointed to the floor in front of them. Dovim was past its zenith now, and the square of bloody sunlight that outlined the window upon the floor had moved a few feet toward the center of the room, where it lay like the terrible stain of some ghastly crime. Theramon stared at its dusky color thoughtfully. Then he swung around and squinted once more into the sun itself. The chip in its side had grown to a black encroachment that covered a third of its visible disk. Theramon shuddered. Once, jokingly, he had talked with Bine of dragons in the sky. Now it seemed to him that the dragon had come, that it had swallowed five of the suns already, that it was nibbling enthusiastically at the only one that remained. Chiron said,
"There are probably 2 million people in Sorrow City who are all trying to join the apostles at once. They'll be holding one giant revival meeting down at Mondior's headquarters, I'll bet. Do I think there's immunity to the darkness effects? Well, we're about to discover if there is, aren't we?"
"There must be. How else would the apostles keep the Book of Revelations going from cycle to cycle, and how on Calgash did it get written in the first place? There must have been some sort of immunity. If everyone had gone mad, who would have been left to write the book?"
"Very likely the members of the secret cult hid themselves away in sanctuaries until it was all over, just as some of us are doing tonight,"
Chiron said. "Not good enough. The Book of Revelations is set up as an eyewitness account. That seems to indicate they had first-hand experience of the madness and survived it."
"Well," said the psychologist, "there are three kinds of people who might remain relatively unaffected. First, the very few who don't get to see the stars at all. The blind, let's say, or those who drink themselves into a stupor at the beginning of the eclipse and stay that way until the end."
They don't count. They're not really witnesses."
"I suppose not. The second group, though, young children, to whom the world as a whole is too new and strange for anything to seem more unusual than anything else. They wouldn't be frightened by the darkness or even the stars, I suspect. Those would just be two more curious events in an endlessly surprising world. You see that, don't you?"
Theramon nodded doubtfully.
"I suppose so. Lastly, there are those whose minds are too coarse-grained to be entirely toppled. The very insensitive might scarcely be affected. The real clods. They just shrug and wait for Onos to rise, I suppose."
"So the Book of Revelation was written by insensitive clods?" Theramon asked, grinning.
"Oh, hardly. It would have been written by some of the keenest minds of the new cycle. And it would have been based on the fugitive memories of the children, combined with the confused, incoherent babblings of the half-mad morons, and, yes, perhaps some of the tales that the clods told."
"You'd better not let Follman hear that."
"Of course, the text would have been extensively edited and re-edited over the years, and even passed on, perhaps, from cycle to cycle, the way Aethor and his people hoped to pass along the secret of gravitation. But my essential point is this, that it can't help but be a massive distortion, even if it is based on fact. For instance, consider the experiment with the holes in the roof that Faro and Imat were telling us about, the one that didn't work."
"Well, what of it?"
"Well, the reason why it didn't work..."
Chiron stopped and rose in alarm.
"Uh-oh."
"Something wrong?" Theramon asked.
"Aethor's coming this way. Just look at his face."
Theramon turned. The old astronomer was moving toward them like some vengeful spirit out of a medieval myth. His skin was paper white. His eyes were blazing. His features were a twisted mask of consternation. He shot a venomous glance toward Follman, who still stood by himself in the corner on the far side of the window, and another at Theramon. To Chiron he said,
"I've been on the communicator for the past 15 minutes. I talked to the sanctuary, and to the security people, and to downtown Sorrow City."
"And?"
"The newspaper man here will be very pleased with his work. The city's a shambles, I hear. Rioters everywhere, looters, panicky mobs."
"What about the sanctuary?"
Chiron asked anxiously.
"Safe. They're sealed off according to plan, and they're going to stay hidden until daybreak at the earliest. They'll be all right. But the city, Chiron, you have no idea."
He was having difficulty in speaking. Theramon said, "Sir, if you would only believe me when I tell you how deeply I regret..."
"There's no time for that now,"
snapped Chiron impatiently. He put his hand on Aethor's arm.
"What about you? Are you all right, Dr. Aethor?"
"Does it matter?"
Aethor leaned toward the window as if trying to see the riots from there.
In a dull voice, he said,
"The moment the eclipse began, everyone out there realized that all the rest of it was going to happen, just as we had said. We and the apostles, and Hysteria sit in. The fires will be starting soon, and I suppose Philemon's mob will be here, too. What are we going to do, Sheeran? Give me some suggestion."
Sheeran's head bent, and he stared in long abstraction at his toes. He tapped his chin with one knuckle for a time. Then he looked up and said crisply,
"Do? What is there to do? Lock the gates. Hope for the best."
"What if we were to tell them that we'd kill Philemon if they tried to break in?"
"And would you?"
Sheeran asked. Athor's eyes sparked in surprise.
"Why, well, I suppose..."
"No," Sheeran said. "You wouldn't."
"But if we threatened to..."
"No, no, they're fanatics, Athor. They already know we're holding him hostage. They probably expect us to kill him the moment they storm the observatory, and that doesn't faze them at all. And you know you wouldn't do it anyway."
"Of course not."
"So then, how long is it until totality?"
"Not quite an hour."
"We'll have to take our chances. It'll take time for the apostles to get their mob together. It's not going to be a bunch of apostles, I'll bet on that. It's going to be a huge mass of ordinary townspeople stirred up to panic by a handful of apostles who promise them immediate entrance into grace, promise them salvation, promise them anything, and it'll take more time to get them out here. Observatory Mount is a good 5 miles from the city."
Sheeran glanced out the window. Theramon, beside him, looked also, staring down the slopes. Below, the farmed patches gave way to clumps of white houses in the suburbs. The metropolis beyond was a blur in the distance, a mist in the waning blaze of Dovim. Eerie, nightmare light bathed the landscape. Without turning, Sheeran said,
"Yes, it'll take time for them to get here. Keep the doors locked. Keep on working. Pray that totality comes first. Once the stars are shining, I think not even the apostles will be able to keep that mob's mind on the job of breaking in here."
Dovim was cut in half. The line of division was pushing a slight concavity across the middle into the still bright portion of the red sun. It was like a gigantic eyelid inexorably dropping down over the light of a world. Theramon stood frozen, staring. The faint clatter of the room behind him faded into oblivion, and he sensed only the thick silence of the fields outside. The very insects seemed frightened, mute, and all things were dimmer and dimmer. That weird blood hue stained everything.
"Don't look so long at a time," Sheeran murmured in his ear.
"At the sun, you mean?"
"At the city, at the sky. I'm not worried about you hurting your eyes. It's your mind, Theramon."
"My mind's all right."
"You wanted to stay that way. How are you feeling?"
"Why?" Theramon narrowed his eyes. His throat was a little dry. He ran his finger along the inside of his collar. Tight, tight. A hand beginning to close around his throat. Was that how it felt? He twisted his neck back and forth, but found no relief. A little trouble breathing, maybe.
"Difficulty in breathing is one of the first symptoms of a claustrophobic attack," Sheeran said. "When you feel your chest tightening, you'd be wise to turn away from the window."
"I want to see what's happening."
"Fine, fine. Whatever you like, then."
Theramon opened his eyes wide and drew 2 or 3 long breaths. "You don't think I can take it, do you?" Wearily, Sheeran said,
"I don't know anything about anything, Theramon. Things are changing from moment to moment, aren't they? Hello. Here's Binet."